This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, let's get started. Time is past 4:30 p.m. on April 12th, 2022. We got folks coming in here. Is there anyone who could possibly lower these blinds in the back? It's very hard to see the screen. Great. Sorry to kill the view there. That's probably okay. All right, perfect. Save some of it. All right, we'll start off with a call to order, past 4:30, as I mentioned before, and we will do a roll call vote.
Ian Akisola?
Here.
Valerie Amer?
Here.
She's here.
You hear me? Okay.
Yep. Okay. Marcy Benza?
Here.
Richard Benzel?
Here.
Ben Kay?
Here.
E. Dorota?
Here.
Jacob White?
Here.
Brandon Cornberry?
Here.
Thomas Fox?
Here.
Preston Hanley?
Here.
David Heiner? Deborah Howell?
Here.
Carolyn Levine? Manaya Lewis? Amelia Nonye?
Here.
James Richards? Damien Sharp?
Here.
Jessica Wither?
Here.
Cool. 14 Quorum?
What's that? Four?
14 Quorum.
We have it. All right. Good to go. All right. And with the conclusion of the roll call, we're going to do the land acknowledgement here. Now, after all this time, I should have remembered it. But here we go. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gaigono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigono disposition and honor the ongoing connection of the Gaigono people, past, present, to these lands and waters. And with that, we will call for late additions to the agenda. Seeing none, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. We've got two today. We have the March 22nd, 2022 meeting minutes. We all need a moment to look those over. And when you're ready, I'm interested in a motion to vote to approve the minutes. Mm-hmm. All right.
Second.
All right. Any motion? I've seen none. All right. That will be approved. And then the next meeting minutes, the 29th of March, which was the last meeting we had held. I'll give a moment for those.
Move.
Second. And I suppose we'll use a unanimous consent. Any objections? If not, those pass as well. Moving on to open forum, I'm very excited tonight to bring Liz Davis Frost here. This is a presentation that we've had in the works for quite some time. So without further ado, Liz, the floor is yours.
Awesome. And Shura is also here to present with me. I know that I sent our slides to y'all, but should I do them myself, or can y'all pull them up? Whatever would work the best.
Sure. Do you have them that we can pull up and we can have you share the screen with all of us?
Yes, I can do that.
Great.
Okay. Okay, I'm now a co-host. Got it. Okay. Sorry, I'm so bad at this still. Okay. Oh, here we go. I think I can do it like this. Okay, can y'all can see my screen? Okay. Sorry. Okay, I'm trying to figure out how I can play it. This is so hard. Slideshow. Play from start. There we go. Right? Okay, cool. All righty. So, hi, everyone. Thank you for letting us be here today. My name is Liz Davis Frost, and I use she, her pronouns, and I am currently a second year Master's of Public Administration student in the Brooks School of Public Policy, and I study social education policy, and then I also currently serve as the graduate and professional student elected trustee. And today I'm joined by Shura. Shura, introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Shura Gatt. I use she, her pronouns. I'm currently serving as the interim associate dean of students and the director of the Women's Resource Center. And I'm also the advisor to GJAC, the Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition, which is a Byline-funded student organization. And thank you to Brandon and Jacob for inviting us here today.
Yes, huge shout out. Thank you. All right, so Shura will start. Today we're going to talk to y'all about all these things on the agenda. So the importance of free period products, the benefits to Cornell. We'll give you a little bit of history about the initiative, talk about our hopes for the future and things that we're currently working on, long and short-term goals, and then we'll open it up for questions and feedback. But also, obviously, we're going to be respectful of your time today. And again, thank you for letting us be here. We've been making our rounds through the assemblies. And also, if you have any questions that pop up during the presentation, don't hesitate to drop them in the chat so you don't forget. I know my memory stinks, and so I have to do that.
I'm going to kick us off with a quote that can help orient us all to this topic. So I don't get to choose to have my period, and this means that I must access the necessary products and services to manage through my menstrual cycles. But access does not transcend equally nor equitably across different levels of income, counties, ages, gender, and race. I remember not being able to buy pads because our family only had enough to buy milk or to fill up the car's tank. Sometimes I would rely on toilet paper, which wasn't sufficient. So I would leak through my pants during school and then miss class time trying to clean the stain. And this is a quote directly from Frances Rojina, who was a Columbia University MPH student when she weighed in on this. So for many of us, what we're talking about today is a remarkable shift from what we grew up with, when it was absolutely the norm for menstruation to never, ever be discussed in public, ever. And at that point, it was culturally common for menstruation to be stigmatized and a source of shame. So if you were caught without products when you needed them, you whispered around to try to find another girl or woman who had them. And usually this was to be hidden from boys and men because it was something that was perceived as gross and made them uncomfortable. I'm happy to say the conversation now is quite different in some important ways. Number one, we recognize that we don't need to continue the learned stigmatization of menstruation. Lots of us do it for a good portion of our lives, and those who don't can know about it too. We talk about menstruators rather than talking about women and girls because we are more cognizant of the experiences of transgender and non-binary people who may not identify as female but still menstruate. And we are aware of the financial burden of purchasing period products, and that many people can't afford to buy them, as in Francis's quote from the previous slide. And the term for this is period poverty. People who experience period poverty are unable to purchase the menstrual products that they need. And in many cases, this means they cannot go to school or work or otherwise participate in daily life. This impacts both mental and physical health as menstruators try to find inexpensive solutions or take time off. And there are absolutely individuals on campus who experience period poverty. We haven't done a study yet, but that's solid anecdotal evidence. And the fourth thing is that we acknowledge that period products are a necessity for menstruators, not optional. As such, much like toilet paper, it makes sense to provide them for free. And we can have a whole separate conversation about why we have not always had free period products in bathrooms. So next slide, Liz. So one thing that is unique is that regardless of people's role at the campus, regardless of socioeconomic status, regardless of race or gender identity, individuals can have access to these products by where they're placed in academic buildings. All groups of people on campus utilize and benefit from these free and accessible products. And this is an example of equity. So equity is just and fair inclusion. An equitable society is one in which all can participate and prosper. And the goal of equity must be to create conditions that allow all to reach their full potential. So if people are needing to choose between period products or food, we are definitely not creating a lot of space for folks to reach their full potential. So as I say, the conversation is changing, and I'm happy to report that the state of California, the country of Scotland, big tech industries, churches, hospitals, and members of the Ivy League, including Harvard, Yale, Columbia, and Brown, are shifting their institutional policies around period products. And we think it would be good to be part of that momentum. And in fact, we already are. And I'm happy to say that in the couple of semesters that we have had period products free in bathrooms, we're already starting to see what appears to be a culture shift. Initially, the products were placed in men's rooms, women's rooms, and in gender-free restrooms. And initially, it wasn't unusual for the building care staff to find the product in the men's rooms, either dumped into the toilets or thrown about. And that has not happened at all this semester, which is a win. And people are asking somewhat regularly why there aren't products in certain bathrooms now, instead of asking why there are some. And it's also not unusual for people to reach out and say, hey, you know, this product isn't actually showing up in this particular bathroom. Why is that? So from going to the point where no one was expecting to see these products at all, we're now at a place where they're saying, hey, I expect these to be here, and they're not. Still muted.
Yep, muted, Liz. Still muted. And so, yeah, I'll give a quick update on history. And so the original pilot program that was called Free the Tampon was ran for 2 months in the spring of 2017 after the student assembly passed the Free the Tampon resolution. And so this initiative was spearheaded by two seniors at the time. It was a student from the Women's Resource Center Executive Board, which is now the Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition, and a representative from the Student Assembly, actually the chair of the Student Assembly at the time. And so even then, it was backed by administrators, and actually, according to the original organizers, the pilot was recommended by then interim president Hunter S. Rawlings III, who also endorsed the program. And so in this original pilot, it was launched in nine buildings, and only in women's and gender neutral bathrooms on certain high traffic floors, so like the basement of Olin or second floor Kennedy. However, once those 2 months were over and those students graduated, the program sort of fell through the cracks. And so to help with the timeline a little bit, this was my freshman spring at Cornell, because I came to campus in fall of 2016. In the 2017-2018 school year, that spring 2017, I actually joined the Women's Resource Center Executive Board and was a member all throughout undergrad. And so we kind of talked about this initiative frequently in board meetings. And so in the fall of 2018, in collaboration with representatives from the SAIFC, so the Student Assembly Infrastructure Fund Committee, there are so many acronyms at the school, I can't. We began having conversations about rebooting the program and funding it through the SAIFC. And so for those of you who don't know what the SAIFC is, it's sort of like a subset of the student assembly that has about $100,000 a year to support student initiatives. So if you remember the like Willard Strait Terrace, like rooftop bar type of deal, like 3-4 years ago, that was an SAIFC project. And an important thing about the SAIFC is that their money comes directly from the undergraduate student activities fee. And so after about a year of conversations and honestly rebuilding a lot of relationships, we were finally set to launch the then Free Menstrual Products Initiative in the spring of 2020. In fact, so this was my senior spring of undergrad. In fact, this program was set to launch on March 12th, 2020. But as we all know, that was the day that we all got the news that we had to pack up our things and leave campus because of the global pandemic that we still exist in. And so I remember getting the emails from Cindy sitting on my couch in College Town asking if, you know, we should launch. And I was like, yes, put them in the bathrooms. And they were like, Liz, no, like everyone's leaving this. Like, you can't do that. And I was like, okay, fine. Also must add that throughout the entirety of the program, from the pilot to now, till now, Cindy Lockwood from Building Care, it has been our point person. And a huge shout out to Cindy and her team, if there are any Building Care people in the room, as well as Chris Smott and his team. We wouldn't be here without them. They've been so supportive and helpful. And honestly, they answer emails faster than anybody I've met at this university. So huge shout out to them. So because of the pandemic, the program ended up not launching until fall 2020. But when that launch did happen, the products were placed in all men's, women, and gender neutral bathrooms in all academic buildings with adequate counter space. And so the adequate counter space part is important because the little like dispenser things in the bathrooms aren't always 100% accessible or work. And they're also not available in all the bathrooms. So we would have had to spend a good bit of money putting those in the bathrooms, and we're already working with a limited $70,000. On a better note, I guess, the pandemic kind of proved to be a sort of silver lining for the initiative, because since it was launched in the first official pandemic semester, supplies lasted significantly longer than we expected them to. We spent about $30,000 on the first round of purchasing. So this was the baskets that they're in, the flyers that they're in, that are in the baskets, the products themselves, the tape to mount the flyers. And then a second round of purchasing was done in April of 2021. Which this time included liners. And so the liners were a direct result of a request that was in the Qualtrics survey that's linked on the flyers that are in the basket. So this was a $32,000 purchase. And then we also recently attempted to do a third round of purchasing at the beginning of this semester with some financial support from some student organizations, because our initial $70,000 ran out. But due to our handy dandy supply chain issues, the purchase has yet to be made. But thankfully we haven't completely run out of products, although we learned like 20 minutes ago, actually, that we ran out of pads. And so only tampons are in the baskets right now. So hopefully we'll be receiving that final round of purchasing at the end of this month, early May, but we'll definitely have all three products back in bathrooms in the fall. And so moving on to hopes for the future. So we broke this down into short-term and long-term goals, and really all of the goals are kind of in progress or in the process. I don't know. But as mentioned earlier, the current funding is coming from the undergraduate student activities fee. Even though our data from the Qualtrics survey tells us that all members of the Cornell community are using these products, faculty, staff, students, and even our visitors and guests. And so we've been, for almost the past 2 years, have been trying to secure a sustainable and long-term funding source. I also must add that when we originally launched the reboot in fall of 2020, but even when we were having the discussions about it in fall of 2018, the $70,000 from the SAIFC was always viewed as temporary funding. So we've truly been having all the conversations for the past 2 years trying to figure out funding. And as I touched on a little bit in the last slide, because our original funding ran out, the program has been and is currently being financially supported by undergraduate student organizations such as the Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition. And while I'm so, so, so thankful for GJAC and all of their support and all of the organizations that have reached out with a desire to support the program, it's not lost upon us that these additional funds are still coming from the undergraduate student activities fee, even though, again, we know that all individuals from every constituency across campus is using the products. And then another short-term goal is that we want to engage individuals from all areas of campus in these conversations because it's so, so important. And as Shura mentioned earlier, we're already seeing some rather profound, in my opinion, examples of campus engagement about the initiative and the topic more broadly. And I know that these conversations are difficult and new for some and constantly evolving. So we would love to develop some educational materials in collaboration with campus and campus partners and constituents to continue these combos. And so we've talked about doing something like a periods across culture social media campaign where we collaborate with different identity-based orgs to do like a social media campaign again. And then one actually really dope event that's happening next week in collaboration between the Women's Resource Center and the Campus Sustainability Office is called Decolonizing the Body, Sustainable Menstruation and Health Self-Care. And at this event, they'll be providing, I think, sure, correct me if I'm wrong, free menstrual cups as well to provide like a more sustainable option for menstruation. So I think, in my opinion, one of the best things about being at Cornell, regardless of your positionality, right? Like we are always learning and growing together as a community. And so we really feel that this is a great opportunity to do just that while also furthering the university's mission about accessibility and support. And so for the long-term goals, again, we want to secure this long-term funding source if you haven't caught on that theme yet. And I do have to add that, you know, given my position as the grad and professional student elected trustee, and now I'm a grad student, I may or may not have stayed an extra 2 years to push this program through. Don't tell my mom that. She just thinks I wanted a master's degree really bad. But I've had conversations with literally every high-ranking administrator. I've had conversations with trustees. I've had conversations with Cornell Health. I've literally talked to every single person that you can talk to on this campus about this initiative. I talked to Fred Van Sickle with Alumni Affairs and Development. I talked to everyone. And the issue is not that people are against the program. Actually, everyone is in full support of the program. It's just that it's finding the money. And I can assume that being in this university assembly meeting that a lot of you have had instances or struggles finding funds to support your own initiatives and your own programs that you're doing within your different departments. And so I can't, you know, Shura and I have this conversation all the time. Like we can't be mad because we understand that like there are so many priorities and so many initiatives and things that are so, so important. And it's hard to kind of, you know, like weigh those things. But yeah, so I just had to throw that in there because there's no one that's like, no, this is a bad program. Don't do it. Bye. They're just like, okay, great. No money. And so, yeah. And then, eventually another long-term goal is to expand, access to these products to include residential and administrative buildings. But again, that would be a very heavy pull and would increase, the amount of money that we would need drastically, as we learned from, Cindy and Chris earlier this week. And so one main thing that I know that I didn't, touch on, was how much money that we always get asked, like, how much money does this program take to run in a year? And that's also a really hard question for us to ask because, you know, we've been only operating this program during the pandemic, right? And so, yes, the original $70,000 did last us almost a year and a couple of months, but that's because we didn't have a lot of students on campus. Shura mentioned a few of our peer institutions that are doing similar things, and there's some schools that are spending close to 200K on this. Some schools are spending like 40K on this. So we really don't, I always say that I'm not a girl in STEM and can't do math. But yeah, we really don't have those adequate numbers, but we've been sticking with around like the $100,000 range, when in conversations with people. And so that's about it. Sure. Have anything else to add? This is our,
no, I think just that one more piece of, because of extra funds for a lot of Byline funded organizations right now, due to the pandemic, it's possible that we'll be able to solicit a little more money from those Byline orgs, which again, not an ideal situation to be in, but really great that we might be able to move along for one more semester thanks to the generosity of these student orgs.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes. So does anyone have any questions for us?
Anyone? Duncan, Katie has one question for you.
I heard you speak at this at the student assembly. Great to hear it then. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about the updates on possible funding. I realize it's not ideal because our focus is not to have this come out of students' pockets. But I'd love to hear more about the possible opportunity with surplus spending or surplus allocations from the Appropriations Committee of student organizations. If you have any information to share this time about that.
Yeah. So is Annalie in the room? I can't really see that far. I'm also not trying to call you. Hey, Annalie. Good to see you. But I also can't see you because your faces are very small on my computer. So I know that there was a conversation about potentially seeking out another SAIFC grant, but we looked into the SA governing documents and it's actually not possible to fund the same program more than once. So that went out of just down the drain, gutter. I don't know the figure of speech, whatever. And as Shura said, there have just been some Byline funded organizations that have said like, hey, we have this surplus money, we're willing to give it to you. But as regarding APSCOM, is that what you asked? I'm not
necessarily. Yeah, I was just asking, that's been a constant conversation at that level with the Appropriations Committee, is the current surplus of some student organizations. Again, I know it kind of goes in the face of the idea of it not being paid for by students, but if there is like currently a push for immediate funding, I think there could be an opportunity. And I'm just wondering like where those conversations could have gone already with Annalie or could go in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're all really down to have those continue those conversations. I personally can't apply. If I have to apply for anything, I personally can't do that because I'm a graduate student now. So that's something that like Shura and I have discussed, maybe tapping on GJAC to help with. And I mean, you're right. Like we don't want to for the long term rely on the student activities fee funds, from undergraduate student organizations. But right now we're kind of at the point where we're trying to just sustain the program as long as possible so we can get the numbers, we can find the funding, we can figure it out, do some more benchmarking because, I can't explain, and maybe some other people in the room have felt this, but when something happens and then it stops happening and then you have to start over from scratch, like Liz is not staying at Cornell to get a PhD for 6 years to push this through, so it's like we have to like keep the momentum going or else someone's gonna have to pick it back up again, and that was like a year and a half of work that I wouldn't want anyone else to have to do again. So long-winded answer to say yes, down to keep having convos with APSCOM. If there are any student orgs that would be willing to donate money, definitely direct them to myself, Shura, and GJAC, and we will talk.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Anybody else? Any questions, comments, concerns? I did have one quick question if no one else has one at the moment. My quick question was, according to the folks, can you all hear me okay? I see that that sure it seems as though you can't hear me. Can you hear me?
Now I can. Initially, I could not in that first sentence.
Okay. In speaking with the folks from the facilities department, how do they estimate the cost? And you know, as you mentioned, the cost was appropriate roughly $70,000 during the COVID year. During a normal year, what do the facilities department folks believe would be an adequate cost to fund this permanently?
This is a conversation we have somewhat frequently, and they're still not in a position to make a guess on that because they get product and then they move it to wherever it's needed because it gets stocked into all of the buildings. And then if one building runs out and another has excess, then so it's hard to predict. So I think it's going to be like when we roll through everything during a semester of full occupation, then what will that look like just overall? So it's going to have to be based on ordering numbers rather than usage numbers, because that's too minuscule to track on behalf of our colleagues in building care.
Yeah, and I'll just add that I think, again, I will not be here. Actually, let me not say that because I don't have a job yet. so I might be here if someone decides to hire me. But I think maybe we'll have those numbers by the end of fall 22 or maybe the beginning of spring 23, just because from our understanding, because of the supply chain issues, we're going to have that big, that the third round of purchasing that we got be implemented or put into the buildings within the during the summer, probably, or at the beginning of fall 22. And so I'm fingers crossed that that's the most normal semester we've had in a hot second. But maybe we'll be able to get some more definite answers then.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions? Final call for questions, comments, concerns. James has one.
I just had some input regarding the design. I don't know if this is like, across the board or if it's just in the law school. But in the law school, the Mentrol products have, like, they're labeled MX and Stroll products with an X rather than an E. And I've always been confused by that because, like, menstruation, you know, the root word comes from mensis, which is a Latin word for, like, the moon and, you know, the monthly cycle rather than the word man or woman. And I don't think anyone was under the impression that menstruation was primarily for men anyway. So I've always been a little bit confused by that.
Sure, you want this or you might. I'm unmuted, so I'll just go for it. So I don't remember who asked that question, but yes, to answer, you're completely right. You should be confused because it doesn't make sense. Over the past 4 years, we've had a lot of conversations about gender and sexuality and like the whole spectrum. And so when we originally printed those flyers, when we originally made the design for those flyers, that was November, December, 2018. And so there's a lot of research out right now saying like there was this big gender revolution during the pandemic because there were a lot of people like staying in their homes and alone in isolation. And that's when a lot of like the identity development happens. And so that was also something that was brought up in our Qualtrics surveys, right? A lot of people were saying, why is there an X in menstruation? It's not a gendered word. And we were like, you know what? You're right. But when we made the flyers in 2018, there were absolutely no conversations about that term, right? Like we did the research, we collaborated with the LGBTRC, like we did our due diligence to say, to make sure that we were printing the most equitable signage and doing things in the most equitable way. But that was just like not a conversation that had happened. That was not language that we were familiar with. So the moment that we kept getting those Qualtrics survey comments, I guess is what they, yeah, comments, so they are, we were like, you know what? Yes, 100%. There was like some convos about it on Twitter and I was just like responding like, sure, I don't know what to do. And so we eventually ended up in the beginning of this semester, end of last semester, we actually reprinted the signage and renamed the program Free Period Products. And so those flyers have been printed, but this is something that we've also been discussing with Building Care is that the flyers are not consistent across campus. So like if you go into, I think MVR, you'll see Free Period Products, but I was in the law school 2 weeks ago and you're right, like they do say Free Menstrual Products with an X. And then there's some buildings on campus that don't have a sign at all and it's just products. So there's like still some like inconsistencies. I can't say that I'm not going to blame that on the Building Care people because they're just phenomenal and the best. I think everyone has been overworked and overwhelmed. And so I think the new flyers not being in all bathrooms is just a side effect of the pandemic and bandwidth. And as Shura said, the facilities people are refilling the products as they go empty. And so my guess is, you know, when the flyers first came to, when we first did the original line, the original purchasing, we first put the products in, the building care people were putting all of the baskets, all of the signs, all of the products in at once. And now that they're refilling as they need to, I don't think that they carry the flyers with them every day to replace the flyers. But the new flyers have been printed. So hopefully as the time goes by, we will see more consistency on the flyers across campus, but that is something that they are aware of and we're also aware of. So thanks for the question.
Awesome, that makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much, James. Good question. Anybody else? No. With that, we will move on. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Shura and Liz. We sincerely appreciate it. You all are welcome to stay if you'd like. We're going to move on with the rest of our agenda, though. But we appreciate your presentation.
Thanks very much for having us.
And I will also mention that the PowerPoint slides for that presentation are available in the box if anyone needs, and we can have those sent out to you through the Office of the Assemblies if you would want those. Moving on, updates regarding the teach-in, we're going to skip that for today, and we're going to move right along to business of the day, where we will be discussing Resolution 8, examining Cornell University's existing waste management practices. Off to Ian for a little bit of a recap of today's site meeting.
Thanks, Jacob. So a couple updates on this. I'm pleased to report that the site committee met earlier today and reviewed the language that was presented at last university assembly meeting and made no changes to the language. I'm also pleased to report that the GPSA passed that language in their meeting yesterday. I think we've discussed it pretty extensively at this point, so I'm not going to belabor it again unless anybody has any specific questions about the what the resolution entails. And I'd like to move to call the question.
Second. All right. Any questions, comments, concerns on this resolution? I do want to just note so folks understand that this is not the same resolution that we had been discussing in terms of resolution number 3. This is an amended resolution that calls for a joint commission alongside the Office of Sustainability Office, and it will make this initiative primarily a research opportunity for us to continue to look into waste management practices. This will have no fiscal implications, as they say, or no direct fiscal implications in terms of purchasing any sort of technology, if that is of concern. And we are looking for a motion. Any move?
Ian moved.
Richard second. All right. Sorry about that. Just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. And with that, we're ready for a vote. Yeah. Sweet. All right. All in favor of Resolution 8. And David Heiner, who may have had to leave.
I think he's online.
Is he on here? Okay.
Yes. I'm here now.
Awesome. Great.
So 16. And then 16-4.
And then anybody against the resolution? And seeing none. Abstaining from the vote, which will be me.
Passes.
Very nice. Congratulations. And Eve, I saw that you'd raise your hand. Was that in a move to vote, or was that a question?
That was a yes.
A yes. Okay. All right. Great. All right, moving on to new business. We have Resolution 9, and that is updates to University Assembly Charter in order to remain consistent with campus judicial documents, and that is on James.
It is yours. Yeah, Jacob. So I'm going to try to refrain from any Beatles references here. So this is a pretty basic one. There's been updates to, obviously, under the new student code of conduct, the titles of several offices have been updated. So I'll just go through those. Basically, the office formerly known as the Judicial Administrator is now known as the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards, which we all know as the OSCCS. The Office of the Judicial Codes Counselor is now known as the Respondents Codes Counselor. And the University Hearing Review Board has undergone a change in terms of the appointment process. It no longer involves nomination by the University Assembly. Additionally, the Office of the Ombudsman has been rebranded as the Ombuds to degender the word. So obviously our charter and bylaws should be consistent with these changes. So yeah, they're in that respect, they're mostly just like titular changes. And as far as the appointment process goes, as we talked about last meeting, under resolution number 6, I believe it was, the one that I brought forth, basically the body formerly known as the CJC, now known as the Campus Codes and Conduct Committee, is responsible or is tasked with the becoming available to the executive committees of the Senate and Assemblies for guidance or advice and basically, you know, any tips to kind of facilitate the appointment process. That's one of the 4C's new formal roles. So I think that should be reflected in the charter in view of the fact that the UA is no longer specifically mentioned in the or it is no longer implicated in the appointment process by the Student Code of Conduct. So basically, yeah, the first changes, the title changes have all just been implemented, you know, as you would imagine. And then the way that I kind of thought we would list the 4C's new role is by basically using the same language from the resolution that I spoke about last meeting, so that the wording, you know, the language and the role of the charter and the bylaws of the University Assembly are essentially the same. And so, yeah, I think it's just common sense for the most part.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions, comments, concerns, folks on the Zoom, if you have any questions? Richard.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I remember that this, the CJC now, or C's or whatever it is, James did a lot of heavy lifting on this, and he really deserves our warm thanks and appreciation for that. I helped a little, but nothing like James. Thank you. Very great.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think Richard speaks for all of us. We all sincerely appreciate it. Awesome work, and I hope we all vote in favor of it. I know I'm supposed to be unbiased in this role. Any questions, comments, concerns? Nobody? All right, with that, I'm looking for a motion to table until next meeting for the assembly bylaws.
So move.
All right, second that. All right, and a motion to table the resolution. I'm sorry, a vote to table, or we can do a unanimous consent. Sure, no hesitation there. We will table resolution number 9. Moving on to the assembly reports, the student assembly. Emily.
Yep. So quick, we had a really short meeting. Just the day before spring break. We had Richard Benzel came to speak to us regarding the teach-in for academic freedom. We had a pretty fruitful discussion just about like the plans for that and ways that students can get involved and support. And then we saw Resolution 52, which was approving special funding projects, a request from the Cornell Undergraduate Research Board for their spring symposium. So we're helping on that.
Great. Any questions? Comments, concerns? No, none. All right, moving on to the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly.
Yes, we had a meeting last night. As Ian mentioned, we passed the resolution similar to Resolution 8 that we passed here today. But other than that, we're just gearing up for elections and just kind of winding down to the end of the year.
Awesome. No questions, comments, concerns? No, none. All right. Moving on to the employee assembly.
So we had a meeting last week in which the Employee Assembly passed Resolution 4 in support of the Faculty Senate's proposed resolution, inclusion and prioritization of a new natatorium, and then to do the Greatest Good capital campaign. So that was passed. We also had a presentation from Christina Lang and Karen Vicks from the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards. There are two staff vacancies on the University Hearing and Review Panel. So they talked about those. And we will have a link on our Employee Assembly ballot, which leads me to elections are underway. And I believe the candidacy period is just closed. And that's my update.
Awesome. Great. Questions, anyone? Comments? No? All right. And finally, the Faculty Senate. Eve.
Hi, everyone. We had a faculty forum on the part-time bachelor's degree program, or the proposed part-time bachelor's degree program for non-traditional students. And it was really a good dialogue. We got to hear from new voices around the university. So part of the program was designed, or it's proposed that it's designed for farm workers and incarcerated individuals. And we finally got to hear from the people who are involved in those programs and what their thoughts were about the program. So we've passed along our feedback, the faculty feedback, to the provost, and our next Senate meeting will be April 20th.
Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Seeing none, we will move on to the committee reports. In terms of the executive committee, I don't believe that there was a meeting. If there was, I missed it. So we'll move on to James with the judicial committee.
No new business beyond the resolution that I mentioned.
Awesome. And again, thank you very much for that. Moving on to the Campus Welfare Committee.
I have a couple of things. The UA Campus Crisis Response Forum, I really think should be new business or something like that for the Assembly to discuss, or maybe it needs to go to the Executive Committee. However, with only one meeting left, this maybe need to be tabled until the fall. The mental health, that was part of that. The civic holiday resolution, I spoke to the folks as that got passed to our committee, and they are in agreement that they'll hold that discussion into the fall due to the semester ending. So I don't really have any other updates.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. And Eve, moving on. Any questions, concerns, comments? Respect to Deborah's report note. Moving on, finally, Ian.
I think that this body might see one more resolution out of the site committee before we wrap up for the year. In addition today to the discussion of UA Resolution 8, Felix Heisel gave a very interesting presentation on material salvage and deconstruction. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, that essentially is the process of making sure that when you're taking apart a structure, you're trying to reuse and recycle as many parts of the building you're dismantling as possible. So we expect to have another resolution at the next meeting, which will essentially call for Cornell to codify some of its policies regarding material salvage and deconstruction.
Awesome. Very interesting. Any comments? So those questions from any folks here or on Zoom, of course. And again, I'm seeing none. So moving on to liaison reports. Not mistaken. Let me finish. Ian, any liaison reports? No? Nobody else? Awesome. And with that, I am, thank you very much, Brandon. I appreciate that. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
I'll give it to Nick since I saw it out of the periphery there. I think he beat you. And a second, anybody? A second? All honorably We'll second that motion. And without any objection, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.